Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will meet with Mr. James Darren Hunt, regional salesman with H&R Agripire in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
It's a beautiful Friday morning here in West Kentucky.
little damp this morning.
I think the creeks are rising.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Yep.
Like a buddy of mine back home used to say, clear, cloudy, and mild with a chance of afternoon hurricane.
That's right. Yeah.
And we're hoping that's all we get today, right? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
You know, I've always said that if you don't like the weather in Kentucky, just hang around a minute, because the next day is liable to be different.
Exactly right.
So, yep.
And we have certainly experienced that in the last 2 months.
Oh gosh, man. It's gone from one extreme to the other, from cold, bitter cold, to hot, to 70-degree days in February, which is unheard of. So, you know, it is what it is.
But, and then a 31-degree day the next day, and then you're back up to 50, and then back up to 60. And
we wonder why we're all sick.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. You know, in some states, they refer to this as mud season. They have five seasons, and mud season is one of them.
That's right.
Here, you know, technically, we're not officially springtime yet.
We're
in the first week of March, but it is the beginning of what they call meteorological spring. So we're expecting springtime weather and springtime temperatures and all those things that go with the temperatures flowing back and forth, which, you know, oftentimes means severe storms. And we're on the watch out for those. Just in the past couple of years, we've had tornadoes in this end of the state that did a lot of destruction, a lot of damage. So we're always watchful for those. We're listening for tornado sirens while we work. So.
Yep.
That's right.
That being said, I hope we can get through the bulk of the day without any major damage.
Yeah, couldn't pick better weather for a podcast, though, today, right?
Hey, at least he's here.
We're inside, and we make note of that from time to time. It's handy to get to work inside every once in a while.
That's right. Absolutely.
Mr. Hunt, glad you're here with us this morning. We appreciate you sitting down and being a part of our show.
Well, I'm sorry Mr. Hunt couldn't be here, but I hope James Darren is okay.
Well, I'm friends and worked with both of the Mr. Hunts prior to you, so and thank the world of both of them. So.
Yeah, I'm a blessed young man. I've got two shining examples of what two good businessmen need to be and what two real men need to be like, too. So it's I get a unique sense of being blessed immensely by the good Lord to have good examples to look up to.
Hey, that's the only thing you can thank for things like that. We probably need to make a show with both of those gentlemen as well.
Absolutely.
At some point in time. I'd love to sit down and talk with your grandfather. I'd worked with him on a lot of projects through the years with the Ag Development Board, and we may need to make a show just about that someday.
If we can get him. That'll be the thing. Getting him nailed down for 45 minutes is going to be the tough part.
Everybody that sees him or knows him really wants him just to sit down, all of his buddies and stuff, you know. Everybody just wants him to write a book. And he said, I don't know that I got that many pages. I don't know that we got that many pages. You know, either that or I'd incriminate some of us and relinquish some of the others. So he's always busy, always doing something. Very rarely does he take some time off just to relax and unwind a little bit. He's doing that, fortunately, this week. So it's good to have him when he gets back. His batteries will be fully charged before corn planting, so we'll be ready to go.
There you go.
Everybody needs a good bit of up juice right before that time starts.
That's right.
Then and in the fall, too.
Amen.
Tell us just a little bit about yourself, your personal background, but then talk a little bit about the history of H&R Agripire, too, for all our listeners.
Yeah, I don't mind to do that. My personal background is, of course, my father is Steve Hunt. My grandfather's Wayne Hunt, like we just said. Grew up on the farm. We farm 10, 12,000 acres down in south end of Christian County, and we extend over a little bit into Trigg County a little bit also. My brother, Brandon, helps run our farm operation there. So I get a unique insight into some of this stuff too. Everybody expects me to know a lot more than I actually know, but I rely pretty heavily on my brother for his knowledge source in the farming aspect of it, so I can keep my equipment side of it somewhat knowledgeable.
Right.
Grew up on the farm, worked on the farm there till the time I was about 16 or 17 years old, when I was still in high school, and then I actually came to AgriPower. Started here sweeping floors in the parts warehouse here and in the shop, putting away parts, learning where everything went, you know, trying to learn the lay of the land. Went to college at Murray State University. I'm a proud racer, and will be till the day I die. although I love UK, right?
Right.
You know, go you, Cats.
But you're sitting with three other Murray grads.
That's right.
But, you know, went to Murray State. At that time, we actually merged with Ford Richardson in Mayfield and acquired the Mayfield location, and that was a easy place for me to go and continue my agri-power education. While over there, I worked in the parts department a little bit, did a little bit of everything just because of my experience on the farm with auto guidance and things like that and coming up through technology. I was there before technology got here, and I've been here since technology has been coming up and changing some too. So unique insight into that, you know, allowed me. I worked in the shop setting up equipment. Me and a couple of my college buddies would go out there in the dead of winter, and we'd have four burn barrels, two forklifts, setting up tillage equipment and stuff like that. yeah, you can't imagine how efficient we were at doing that. But I got to do that. I got to be assistant service manager there for a little while. Worked in the Precision Ag office. Was a warranty writer as well. I know you probably wouldn't ever think it, but my public speaking isn't terrible, so I could figure out how to interpret what the technicians were talking about to try to get paid more for warranty stuff. So I dabbled in a little bit into that too. Graduated college. It was at that time that I knew, you know, in the future I wanted to be an ag salesman. So that was right around the time my brother had the birth of his first son, Case, as fate would have it, is his name. And I went down and worked on the farm for 2 years with him and the guys down there. And I felt like in order to be a salesman, in order to communicate what this stuff could do, I really need to be able to do it myself and be hands-on. And yeah, I grew up doing it here and there and in and out. But growing up, you're playing basketball, you're going to church, you're going to school, you got so much other stuff going on. But to really hone in and focus on your craft was pretty important to me if I was going to be a salesman. I felt like I had the people skills thing, you know, somewhat naturally, and you can kind of work on those and hone those as you get into your sales career. But product knowledge is something you can't replace.
That's right.
So, and being able to go, and that's something that I do today with my customers, being able to go out and help them set up their equipment. As you know, time constraints happen, as things happen, sometimes, you know, somebody doesn't show up for work or something happens or they got meetings or they need to be somewhere, so... actually proud to say that I have the ability to go out and fill in for them sometimes if they need me to, you know, which makes me feel good. And it also keeps me, keeps my edges sharp, you know, so I can still operate the equipment. But I worked on the farm for 2 years, and then AgriPower came calling again because we were expanding again. At that point, we decided to go, south into Tennessee, and we merged with, Willie German. And they had two locations down there in Brownsville and Somerville. Funny story about that is I went down there on a weekend or maybe a couple of days into the next week to try to help them transition and count inventory and get everything, all the business stuff taken care of so that whenever we flipped the switch and converted over to H&R AgriPower business, you know, that everybody would be ready to go. Be a helping hand there into the new systems, help everybody learn how to use all of our stuff that we do here to help it translate to the head accounting people here. So that was kind of my job down there, try to count parts, organize things, get displays built the way that the majority of our other locations like to do. And I was supposed to go home, and the people that run the locations down there then came to me and said, hey, we don't have a service manager in our Somerville location. And it's not a real big ag area over there, but we really would like it to be. So would you mind to stay on and be our service manager down there? I said, well, yeah, of course, you know, until you get somebody down here. It was a big honor for me, but I was young, and I was full of want to and knowing everything, of course, I guess, for lack of better words.
No, that was a good choice.
Yeah, it could have went south.
Yeah, it could have.
We've got an edit button.
Yeah, somewhere. That's good. But admittingly, being young and thought I knew a lot and trying to figure out how to work with people.
Mm-hmm.
that taught me a lot there. So I stayed down there for about 18 months, lived in a hotel room. Ooh. And for about 18 months, and it was a 45-minute drive to work every day. Mm. And it was a great part of town that the dealership was in at that time. We expanded our customer base into Mississippi a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Actually got to grow with some of those guys down there. So after that, I moved back up to Mayfield, as fate would have it, come full circle. Moved back up to Mayfield, and I was service manager there for about 8 or 10 months. And we found somebody to permanently take that position there, and then I moved here to Hopkinsville. Now I've been doing equipment sales ever since. That was about 2014 or 2015, something right. like that. So
I knew it'd been a while.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So yeah, it doesn't feel like it's been that long. But
time flies when you're having fun.
It does. Yeah, yeah. When you're losing money, time really flies. But anyway, the longer you sell, the more you learn to hone your craft and be able to work with your customers and be able to take care and know the things you have to do to be able to take care of them, which is something I take great joy in doing.
It's something, though, just when you said when you first started, you said, my first job was sweeping the floors and putting parts up. And, you know, there is something about coming in and at the ground level and working your way up, and especially from your customer base or the other people that you're working with that think that you might be coming in here and have an unfair advantage against them. And that's a great way to, you know, to come in there and to learn it all and to say that you're going to do everything that they're going to do. I'm not going to ask you to do something that I've not either already done or that I'm willing to do myself. And I think that speaks volumes to work conditions and not only that, but just your customers to see that you're a hard worker, that you're going to do whatever needs to be done to get the job done. And those are the people that other people want to work with. Those are the other people that your customers are going to want to do business with, people like that, because they don't have to worry about when they call you if you're going to do everything that you can to help them on whatever that need may be. So.
Yeah, it was I felt like it's done me a lot of good because as you change positions here, you know, I still have all my old logins that I used to have, so I can still look up parts today. I can still look up and see when the warranty expires on your sprayer. I can still do that stuff to help me with my job now.
Sure.
It also helped me build a rapport with the guys that I sell equipment to now.
Sure.
Because those guys, I was selling, parts to an 8N Ford in Mayfield, Kentucky, 15 years ago. But it really, looking back on it, you know, every part of it wasn't fun, but putting in that work and putting in the time and effort, I wouldn't have wanted to do it any other way. Just because whenever we hire in new people here, new young people here, I can sit across from the table and say, look, I've been where you're at. I know what you're dealing with.
Yep.
Here's how I did it. Now you've got to make it work for yourself, and you've got to do.
And
you
this is how that how benefited me.
That's right.
Yep. This is how it made me a better employee or, you know, a service guy or a salesman or whatever the case may be. That made
all
me better.
Above.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a world of short-term stuff, in a world of small picture things, having the ability to give somebody the big picture
right.
stuff is a big tool in the arsenal, yep. I guess you would say.
You know, and I think that and your granddad and your dad both would agree with this, but your whole company – y'all's whole philosophy is, a lot of it is customer service.
Yep.
And that's what y'all are big on, and that's what y'all feel like is important. And I think the people that buy from y'all feel like that's important as well.
I think you're right. We've talked a lot on this show before about relationships, you know, in all manners of business, but especially in agriculture. And that's really what customer service is. You're developing a relationship with your customer that they come to depend on you, but they come to trust and enjoy that relationship. It goes both ways.
And they respect. You respect each other, too, and I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, well, and having somebody that's willing to pick up the other end of that phone. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's you'll see me walk around with two phones today. I do, just because I can't give up one and gain the other, you know, but things come with both of those things. But having the best ability is availability. And that's what this company was founded on, customer service. It was started because of customer service. A lot of people don't know way back when Hunt Farms actually farmed with John Deere equipment. We were all John Deere equipment at one time. I can faintly remember. Now, you know those kids that say, I remember when I was 3 years old. I can faintly remember. I have glimmering memories of John Deere equipment being on our farm and me mm-hmm. riding around with my dad and stuff like that. So that's something that's still somewhat real to me. But what happened, inevitably, we had a tractor go down. Yes, John Deere equipment breaks too for everybody on here. I just want everybody to know that.
It all does.
Yeah, no matter what color it is. It's going to happen, right? Unless God comes out with his own equipment line, which, right. you know, I'd signed up to be a seller for first day. But we had a tractor breakdown, and when my grandfather called the dealership to see when we could get somebody out there to work on that tractor, the lead time was 2 weeks. Mm. And this was in busy time.
Right.
It's 2 weeks. And this is before the days of, well, just hook up another tractor.
Yep.
Right. So my grandfather, being the entrepreneur and the businessman that he is, owned Agrichem at the time, and that was up in full roar, too, in addition yep. to our farming operation. So being the glutton for punishment that he is, he decided that the best way to fix it was just to go by the company Case Store here in Hopkinsville. And it was out on 41A. Yep. There's a camper place out there for sale now. It's across from the Murray State Extension campus out there now, across from Penrow Ford. And that's where we started. That's where we started. The Case Store started. And mm-hmm. I remember growing up, running around. Terry Martin was there. So I've been around Terry just as long as I've been around anybody else. And it's crazy that we've come full circle and that we're as close as we are today. But that's where we started, and that was the late 90s is when that was.
That I was going to ask you for a year. I came back to Christian County as an extension agent in 98, and I remember the Case Store being out there.
Yep, it was right at 96, 97, 98, right. somewhere in there. Again, I don't have a bad memory. I just got too much to remember.
we're putting them together about the same time frame, though.
Yeah, so it's mid to late 90s was that. And then a couple of years later, my grandfather and Mr. Ross Morgan, that owned H&R Implement across town at the time, got together and they said, hey, I think the best way for us to do this and tag team Deere would be for us to go in together. And shortly is that time when Case became Case IH and all mm-hmm. that stuff was happening and going, and that full transition change happened. And in 2000, the year 2000, is when we built this building mm-hmm. and moved in here. And whenever we moved in here, we were just one store, obviously. Yeah. Shortly after that, we moved on and became two, then three. And now we're just shy of 20 today. So yep. I think at one time it was 21 or 22, but we've consolidated some locations and moved some stores into some other areas and stuff mm-hmm. so you don't get cross-contamination of your own market and things like that. But that's really just the brief story. I mean, I don't really have a brief bone in my body. but that's kind of the brief story of how AgriPower got to where it is today. AgriPower, I am proud to say that AgriPower, H&R AgriPower as a company, is actually an ESOP company now. Those that don't know what ESOP stands for, it stands for Employee Stock Ownership Program. So the employees own the company today, and we are proud of that fact. And every store that we merge with, every store that we add in now is actually a part of that family. Mm-hmm. So it was a big change for me because my family owned the store, owned the business as long as I could remember. Yeah. But it's been a welcome change, and Grandpa's still in charge of the board. My dad and Ronnie Barnett are also on the board. We have two outside board members as well, just to keep everybody honest and be sure, you know, we don't have the hands in the wrong cookie jars and stuff like that sure. for the appearance purposes. And we have two great men, Tom Yo and Jim Weber, that are just phenomenal businessmen and phenomenal men. And they keep the agricultural business in a track that it needs to be in. So I think that's a good additive for us as well. But mm-hmm. it gives my coworkers, it gives us a sense of ownership, right? Mm-hmm. And something that you can take to the bank. It's a tangible thing that you can look at the end of the year and say, what did I do to benefit the value of our business today? Mm-hmm. You know, and the ideal thing would be to get everybody to buy into that and make it so successful that you can expand into other markets and do other things and have other business opportunities that are ESOPs as well, because that's the only way you're going to go forward. But I think Grandpa is going to be 80 this year. On May the 11th, he's going to turn 80 this year. Still gets up and comes to work every day. Still is as passionate as he ever has been. One thing that probably I feel like distinguishes my grandfather from a lot of people in the agricultural sector today is his foresight. He can sit down at a table with a group of people and he could say he's been on the Ag Development Board, you know, as you mentioned, for forever. And he always wants to encourage new business and new opportunities and things like that. And he can look. He'll come in here. We have a morning sales meeting every morning. We have a sales meeting to kick off our day with our sales department, our service department, and our parts department. And Grandpa will come in here and lay some knowledge on us a lot of times. And a lot of times it's before the season starts or it's before the year starts. Grandpa reads a lot. He keeps his Rambo bank analysis handy. I think he sleeps with that thing sometimes. But he can study that thing, and he has a pretty good idea and a pretty good foresight where this thing's going to be 6 months from now.
Yep.
So that helps us plan our business better and form better business opinions of how we're going to handle stuff as a group going forward.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, his foresight and his contribution to agriculture, just even here locally and in a broader sense, the whole state, you know, his contribution to agriculture has been second to none. I mean, he does. You're right. He has that where he can see way down the road and have those, you know, and he encourages young people and he encourages people to for businesses and new businesses. And, I mean, you're not going to find anybody any better than Wayne Hunt.
I wouldn't be 100% on this, but I'm almost for sure I am, that he's probably the longest running member on the Kentucky Ag Development Board.
If not, he's dang close.
Yeah, no, I think he is.
He's
yeah.
been there since the beginning, and yeah. I can't think of anybody else who was. So
right.
that's,
yep. you know, I think that's right.
I made mention to Vicki when we were getting ready this morning. Of course, I spent 20 years as the ag agent here in Christian County, and I will always consider myself fortunate for getting to work here because of the projects that I got to be involved in, and a lot of those are because of your grandfather and because of his work on the Ag Development Board. When I think about the ethanol plant, I think about the growth of Seymour Milling, you know, after it came here. Those are all things that were just fun, neat things to get to do in agricultural growth that you don't see in Everett County. And I've always considered myself just really, really fortunate to have been gotten to be involved with all that.
Right. Well, I know he'd appreciate that, you know, if he were to hear that. But I don't get an opportunity to brag on my grandfather too much. But I don't ever want to come across that way. It's just an immense amount of respect that I have for my grandfather, and just being able to watch, you know, somewhat close growing up. I'm 34 now, and you begin to appreciate those things when you see them happen in real time now. And I think I don't know that it would be a very big stretch to say that he is probably one of the top three people of the most influential people in Kentucky agriculture today.
100%.
I'd put my money on it.
Yeah, sure. and to be able to have his knowledge and have his mind, and I mean he gets up on tractor and loader and cleans his own gutters out today, guys. I mean, you know, so it's not like he's you know, just a shell of who he used to be, but
yep.
he is undoubtedly had to change with the times a little bit, you know, because in the time to where he grew up, things were a lot different, you know, than they are today. And as things change and things move forward, he's never one to get in the way of progress. You know, I'm proud to say that when I first started working here, it was all guys working here, you know. And as times change and as times progress, I am proud to say that I think we have a young lady in just about every department in this place. We have two young ladies that answer the they're working our service department. They're assistant service managers, our new warehouse managers, a young lady. We have young ladies on the parts counter in the accounting department. So I say that to say, because I get approached all the time, like, hey, are y'all hiring? You know, well, I don't know that I fit in out there. Yeah, you know what? Look, this is what AgriPower needs today. We need good people that are willing to go to work. We can teach you the rest.
Yeah,
that's all we need.
Well, and as you talk about your grandfather, you know, it reminds me when I graduated college a few years back, and because I just turned 50. So But
you don't look a day over 25.
Well, aren't you kind?
Oh my gosh.
But
oh my God.
He already told us he's a salesman.
She's not buying. She's not buying anything, James.
Yeah, not today. Not
But I went to work for Miles Farm Supply right out of when I was out of college. And it's funny that you say when you started working here, it was all men. Well, when I went to work as a crop consultant for Miles Farm Supply, it was all men. But Billy Joe Miles gave me the opportunity to go to work for him as a crop consultant. And you know, that's kind of where I got my start. And it takes people like that to give other people the opportunities,
yep.
You know, and you know, I've met your grandfather, and I think that it's wonderful that we got people like that that give others the opportunity to get a start, because yep. Everybody's got to have that opportunity to start. If you're ever gonna be able to be successful, you got to start somewhere,
for sure.
And that forward thinking mindset of being. Yep. You know, of doing that and helping those folks. So,
absolutely. Well, I'm going to draw us back into what we really came to talk
about. Sorry
about
that. Yeah, no, I told
we're good.
You. Not a brief bone in my body. You
no,
don't
we're
have
good.
To worry
this
about
is all
that.
Good.
We're good, but
you got an edit button.
Yeah, we do have an edit button. Talk to us a little bit about what we need to be doing to get our planters ready, and what are some really key things that we need to really hone in on to make us more efficient or make us do a better job planting, and, you know, all of the things that go along with planting. What can we do to be better at it?
Well, the first thing you need to do is, in the wintertime towards the end of the year, you probably need to call me. We probably need to trade your planter in for a new one, so we can get
take
you set
care
up
of those
here.
Problems.
So you can go to Florida or Mexico in the wintertime. You don't have to worry about anything. Put everything in the hands of Darren and Steve and the guys here at H&R to get your new planter ready to go.
Oh, my goodness.
You'll find a place for that old one to go, too, won't
for
you?
For sure. Yes, sir. And the good thing is we'll get it reconditioned, get it ready, field ready to go today. I get asked that question a lot, you know, all being it, because I spent my winters and stuff growing up getting planters ready on the farm as well. And everybody has their own way, and everybody has their own method to their madness. You know, so it's never a cookie cutter answer, you know. My answer to them is, you know, hey, we need to look at the broad scope of what our plan is for your operation going forward. You know, we need to review our yield maps of last year. Of course, by this time, we've already got our seed planned and what we're going to be doing and stuff like that. So need to get our fertilizer stuff that we're going to put on our planter. Are we going to just do, you know, start or pop up? Are we going to do 2x2? Do we need to make any improvements to our planter and things like that to try to get a little bit of a yield bump? Because, rarely known fact here today, they're not manufacturing land anymore. So we have to get the most out of the land that we do have today. So the things that we can do to get a better start, we need to, because our whole year is going to be framed up here probably in the next 60 days. So you can't get a good result if you don't get a good start. You know, it's my first thing that I always tell all my customers. But those things that you know that you forget about, that you looked at, you put the planter in the shed last year and said, hey, we'll take care of that before we get started this spring, that never happens. What I encourage people to do is we need to go ahead and get those things out of the shop. We need to get them unfolded. We run an inspection program here. No matter what kind of planter you run, usually your dealership, every dealership runs some sort of inspection program. I know the guys over at Hudson do a great job of that as well. I'm going to quote-unquote professionals, because farmers are professionals too, but let the guys that take care of the equipment, that are around the equipment all the time, that are around more equipment than just yours, let them at least look at it. I mean, here I'm going to shoot out a number here. Here you're looking at $400 or $500 to get your planter inspected by us. And with that, you know, you're going to get a plethora of parts, you know, suggestions. You know, they're going to identify all the wear items. They're going to crawl up under it and look at things that you probably don't want to look at. Yeah. They're going to look for things that aren't broke, as well as for the things that are broken already. So at least to get those eyes on there. Now, you want to do the work yourself, totally up to you, and we are totally okay with that. But guess what? Because you did an inspection, you're going to get a parts discount from us just for – doing business with us and letting our guys look at your stuff. So that's super important to check the stress and wear items of that. I followed Jepson Farms on Facebook last night, and last night they put videos up of the guys in the shop replacing parallel arms, you know, with the new steel bushings in them. They're supposed to last for forever, and you know, just to tighten up that row unit, because what that allows you to do, you know, it allows that row unit to stay on the ground for a longer amount of time. And the longer that row unit can stay on the ground, the more consistent your seed depth and your seed spacing and all that's going to be. So right now is usually a little past time to start looking at upgrades and things like that. But in the wintertime around the farm shows and things like that, or the time that you want to look at your technology updates, because planters have come a long way, even in my lifetime. We were talking before we came on today. I remember planter. I was a planter fill-up guy back when we did boxes before cell phones and all that kind of stuff, right? So the thing you did to entertain yourself was after you filled the planter up, you burned that big old pile of corn sacks, right? Yeah. And you would I mean, this is the days where you'd have to get out and dig behind the planter for hours at a time in the day, you know, and just to check your spacing and check your seed depth. And the good guy, and everybody's doing that today still, but they have a plethora of technology today that instead of being driven by the ground, they're driven by electrical current. You know, instead of having a row clutch, you have the drive, you know, you have the drive motor that is the row clutch that acts as a double feature today. We had spring downforce back in the day, right? Yep. Then if you wanted more, we had to get a stiffer spring, right?
Yeah.
Well, today, well, I mean, we progressed to airbags, which got us really far for a really long time until somebody figured that, hey, fluid moves a lot faster than air can. so now we have hydraulic downforce. If I was to pick anything that would be the best money to spend on a planter upgrade today, it's hydraulic downforce on the planter. Yep, that thing is sensing stuff 200 times a second. It's sensing, and it changes 5 times a second. You will never find an airbag or air compressor that can keep up with that today. Yeah. So it's when what that allows for is that consistent ground road, that consistent ride. And guess what? Now we can monitor that today. Instead of sitting back there and looking out your back your window and going, yeah, that thing ain't bouncing a whole lot. Now we can look up at a computer and say, hey, that thing is on the ground 98% of the time. We're doing pretty good. Yeah. Or my dad can pull the farm up in his office that watched their planter go across the field and say, hey, your ground contact's 93%, guys. We need to slow down, or we need to make some changes, or whatever you want to do. You can draw zones today on your computer, and as your planter goes across that zone, you can change your population if you have a pivot there. So there's just a ton of upgrades and stuff, and I know you asked me, you know, what do we need to be doing, but my thing is we need to be planning. We need to be locking that stuff down. If we've got irrigation circles, we need to be sure we're picking the right hybrids to be able to take advantage of the luxury of irrigation that we have. And, yeah, we probably need to bump that population up a little bit in that irrigation circle, right? And then when we come out of it, hey, let's not waste as much money. Let's take some of that down and use the technology that's available to us today that really, if your planter's spec'd out with it, isn't going to cost it to you. You just have to apply it. So a lot of my customers are busy. I know you would never figure that, but a lot of my guys just have so much going on. That they utilize, you know, people like Wheat Tech, people like us, you know, to go in there and try to help them get this stuff down. Yeah. You know, my brother Brandon spends hours and hours and hours and hours and hours in front of a computer in his office trying to figure out all this stuff and being sure we've got everything where it needs to be, and all the yield maps are loaded and the prescription maps are here. And today we have the luxury of being able to push that stuff out from a stationary location. I remember that Ag Leader 3000 yield monitor days when my dad would da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, I grew up going to sleep with that sound. So I remember those days where you had to take it and do every single one, you know. Planning is big. Planning is key. You know, everybody knows we're going to be planting corn, barring catastrophe, by the 10th, 15th of April, right? So we know that date is coming.
Yep.
And it's not going to change. It comes the same time every year. But inevitably, sometimes we like to procrastinate. So what I would suggest doing, get your planter out, unfold it, like we talked about, run it through the inspection program, get those things fixed. Mm-hmm. And after we have them fixed, let's set it in the ground. I know mm-hmm. seed's expensive. I know our inputs are going in.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need a ton. Just get a little bit, you know. Get some water. Run some water through your fertilizer system, you know. Put mm-hmm. some seed in your planter to get it to be sure, hey, is it putting out where it needs to go? Hey, do we have our singulators set
yep.
properly?
Yep.
Are our belts worn inside of our seed meter? Are our brushes worn? What do we need to be looking at? Is this putting out? You can tell a lot before you go to the game time, you yep. know. The wrong time to practice is not in the game. You practice exactly. before you go to the yeah, game.
You know, that being said, and I think it's less and less every year, but we still have planters come right out of the shed just as they were put up the year before.
Every year.
It's becoming less and less, I think, and I really think the technology is helping to drive that because yep. the technology is such that it has to be updated, it has to be monitored, mm-hmm. and that's – really drug a lot of people along the way with it. But when we talk about all these changes, they're not changes just for technology's sake. It's all about getting that stand that we need.
That's right.
And that's the thing. And I think any farmer can appreciate that, getting a good stand. Yep. And all these things, yep. all these changes, all these monitorings and inspections are all about getting that stand.
It is.
And yep. you can have everything else. You can have the right variety. You can have the right planting conditions. You can have the correct weed control. You can have all of that exactly right, but you can mess it up really yeah. quick
yep.
with not having your planter ready because, I mean, you know, you've got – that is the main factor on getting that stand that you want that's going to carry you on through the mm-hmm. rest of the year. Yep. And you can have everything right and your planter be wrong and all mm-hmm. that's almost
yep.
for nothing.
Yep. James Darren, do you see a lot of people – I know you mentioned 2x2 earlier, mm-hmm. you know, do you see a lot of people going to a lot of this kind of starter fertilizer and things of this nature? Do you see more of that now than you used to?
I do. You know, because of the different products that come out every year, it makes it more feasible and easier to do. My brother has been doing 2x2 along with, you know, Joseph C.S. Brandon mm-hmm. and Joseph are pretty good friends, and they bounce stuff off of each other pretty easily. But for the longest time, it was a big, cumbersome apparatus, you know, that went on to your planter row unit and things mm-hmm. like that. And mm-hmm. Depending on how you set it up today, it can still be that way.
Yeah.
But the guys at Precision Planting, we have a planter in the back here today that has just about every gadget that you could put on a planter on it today. And one of those things is conceal from Precision. You actually put the 2x2 down through the gauge wheels. So the gauge wheel is already on mm-hmm. the planter, right? Mm-hmm. So why not yep. utilize that mm-hmm. stuff and try to put it down beside there? I like that for a couple of reasons because it actually follows where the seed goes a lot easier because those gauge wheels are right there beside it. Those gauge wheels are stationary. They're not mm-hmm. moving this way. They're only mm-hmm. going up and down. So around curves and things of that nature, I feel like it does a better job applying a fertilizer consistent. Where it needs mm-hmm. to be. But a lot of my guys not only are they increasing their startup programs and playing with different things, they're also a lot of my guys are starting to do the strip till stuff.
That was my next question. So I'm glad you went there.
in an area where no till started, right, with the Youngs down in my neck of the woods. We've kind of transitioned, I think, in this area. A lot of people are what I would categorize as minimal till. Because you have to have some sort of something. But we started doing strip till on our place, and we've been through, you know, 3 or 4 different manufacturers of strip till mm-hmm. rigs and things of that nature. And Brandon is heavily just involved. He's involved, and I don't give him enough credit because he's my big brother a lot of times, but he's pretty sharp and he's pretty smart, and yep. He has the connections to be able to make that stuff work. And the guys over at Martin Tillage, Steve Martin and those guys, they've had a big hand in the one that we're using right now, and it's the mm-hmm. AgGuru machine. So I see big advantage of being able to lay those strips down in the fall, mm-hmm. Putting a cover crop beside them, you know, so you minimize your erosion and how you build that strip. is really important to the health of that strip in the springtime. You know, you can get to the field quicker because mm-hmm. those strips are warmer faster. Keeping the planter on the strip is another thing that's important. You know, you got to do the whole gambit of that mm-hmm. stuff, you know, to make it successful. But transitioning to strip till, I think, is something that's going to be super beneficial for our area. I think, of course, everybody hates to give out those numbers, but I'm going to say anywhere from 5 to 10 bushel bump, you know, going to mm-hmm. a strip till piece and having mm-hmm. your stuff where you need it when you need it. Just, you have so much ability to do so many other things as far as banding fertilizer and that sort of stuff. Just depends on how far down the rabbit hole you want to go. But mm-hmm. Just initially, just with the strip till and putting the planter on that strip in a pre-tilled environment that is really ideal planting conditions, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. With all the other stuff that we've got on our planters today, makes it to where you get a lot better stand and makes it where you get things up a lot earlier and a lot faster and more consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that's what you shoot for is getting a good, a really good stand, number mm-hmm. one, because that's in the end, that's what's going to, your yield is going to depend on what kind of stand you have.
Well, the stage for the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. So it's really important. I think working with planters and getting all that right. And I used to look at people that would fool with their planter for a long time, you know, yeah. At the beginning. I was like, man, it's taking them forever. You know, but the fact of the matter was they probably had more consistent stands than anybody anywhere else.
That's right.
You know, I think of Gary and Michael Lester.
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
I used to see them digging around for days, you know, and Gary would be out there digging around for days. But getting all of that right, you can tell that they do a good job. So, I mean, that's a big deal.
You know, James, Darren, we've been doing this show a little over a year now, and almost every show we think of something comes up during the discussion that we need to follow up on and need to do a show on. And talking about the no-till story and the Youngs, I got the opportunity to work with John Young for a lot of years, and he's going to be pretty quick on our list to call about sitting down and doing a show with, I think. And I think he'd do that with us.
Oh, he would. Yeah, no, the Youngs are great people. I have the honor to be able to call them customers and friends of ours. Mm-hmm. I actually have them in a little bit of red equipment, which is a fantastic feeling. But more importantly, just the amount of respect, you know, that goes there, and just the history of agriculture that we have in there with them and Mr. Howard Martin and you know, my Uncle Wesley and my grandfather. It's just that you could get all those guys in a room, and I don't know that you'd have long enough of for a podcast to be able to guys could talk about.
I've said many times, you know, with agriculture, it's just different. You know, we've said that many times on a podcast, but it is. The ag community in itself is just it's a different kind of network. It's a different kind of community than other sectors. Yep. And, you know, like what you're saying, I mean, that just speaks of that. And we've said that I don't know how many times on how many have the podcast that we've recorded. And it's, we all do want everybody to succeed. We really do. We want to work together and we want to try to get everybody, you know, to do well and help each other and, you know, and appreciate everything that you're doing to make sure that your customers are taken care of. And mm-hmm. you know, even folks that's probably not your customers may call and ask you, and I bet you'll kind of help them too. You're just that kind of guy. So, you know, we're just all in this together.
I do. We always want to try to help and be sure everybody gets their stuff set right, because, I mean, it's not about whether you're red or green or brown or whatever kind of equipment you run. You know, I mean, it's the agricultural community is like one big family, and we want to share everybody's kind of secretive of their stuff that they make work right, you know, because mm-hmm. they want to do the best that they can do. But there's stuff that people that are in the positions, you know, that we are in can do to help share that stuff and just at least help people get their stuff set right and help them make the most of what they got. Anyway.
Well, because they have to be successful for you to continue to be successful.
Absolutely. And I like to be successful.
I'll tell you what, everybody does. And on that note, we've told you at the beginning of this, we always wrap our shows up with a timely tip that's pertinent to the season that we're operating in. And we thought a good timely tip for this show would be to make efficient use of your shop time before planting season gets here. We're almost there. We've only got, you know, mm-hmm. another month probably before, but on the same hand, we're in March. We don't know what the weather's going to bring. Things could get real nice here in 2 or 3 weeks, and we'd see a lot of equipment going up and down the road. But we want to urge producers to make use of that shop time. Your grandfather and I have talked about this a lot through the years, that when we come home from the farm machinery show, everybody is itching. Everybody is ready to go. They're anxious to get things done. But we've got a little bit of time there in January, and that's when we really ought to be doing a lot of these planter inspections and things like that. So anything you want to add to that?
No. I mean, you're exactly right. You know, I mean, farm machinery show is kind of the time when you get home to kick yourself in the pants and let's get going. I mean, we had our planter clinic here at AgriPower in Hopkinsville earlier this week just to try to give everybody a refresher, you know, of the different features and stuff and how to go in there and set different things and things like that. And that's when we, you know, it's a free time to go in there and give them access to the guys that, you know, work on their stuff and do the inspections and know the guys that know. I can figure it out if I get in there. That's one of my weaknesses with us changing platforms and stuff right now. As I can say, just let me get in the tractor with you. Yeah, I can figure it out. It's hard for me to recall it over the phone right now. Sure. But, you know, make use of your time in your shop, you know. And I feel like majority of our guys do that. But also, when that weather's nice, you know, get that thing out and set it in the ground. You know, be sure nothing's stuck. Be sure everything's going to turn and everything's going where it needs to go. And we don't have a wire pulled out of somewhere and it's not communicating. So I'd rather fight that on the 5th of March than the 5th of April.
Absolutely. That's right. Every day of the week. Well, with that, sir, we appreciate you being here. We want to thank you and thank our hosts for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.